Yeah, my name's James. I'm an addict.
Hi, James.
Really nervous. There's lots of you and there's only one of me. But I kind of just got to remember we're kind of all on the same side. When I was a kid, I always felt different. And I always did everything to excess. You know, there was kind of no off button. I remember like riding my BMX till literally I couldn't walk anymore, or listening to music, going into like a fantasy world, and I was unable to accept reality. My mum was ill ever since I can remember, and I remember my dad coming to me one day and saying, you know, she's got cancer and she's not going to get better. And my reaction to that was just to laugh and sort of not really believe it. A few years later, he turned up at my school and, you know, sort of took me out of the class, and I thought it was a bit strange. And he said, you know, she's died. And again, my initial reaction, I just couldn't accept it. I was just nothing, you know. And he said, oh, you've got to come home. And, you know, again, I was like, well, can't I stay here and play with my friends? You know, I couldn't accept the reality of the situation. I was 13 at the time. It was a week before Christmas. And, you know, still got presents from her, which was a bit strange. But I just remember at the funeral just feeling really self-conscious, like everyone's looking at me. Like I knew it was a funeral. You know, I'm supposed to be sad. This is a funeral. But all I could feel was all these eyes on me. And, you know, just... So anyway, a couple of months later, I was with my dad, and he had a heart attack. And he had a heart attack next to me. And he just started... His eyes rolled back in his head. He started making animal noises, and it scared the life out of me. I had to call an ambulance, and I was absolutely frozen with fear. And my grandparents came down from Scotland, and they said to me, oh, do you want to go and visit him in hospital? And again, I didn't want to, I couldn't accept reality. I just said, oh no, I'll see him when he's better, you know, I'll see him when he's better. A couple of days later, they came into my room, me and my sister are there, and they said, oh, he's died. And I remember it clearly. My sister, who was just next to me, she burst out, her instant reaction, burst out crying. For me, though, I remember it like a sheet of glass just came down like that in front of me, really slowly, like sort of cloudy sort of glass. I remember feeling just like concrete. I felt nothing. Again, at the funeral, just felt nothing. I knew I should be sad. This is a funeral, you know? But all I felt was everyone looking at me. And a month later, my granddad died as well. And again, nothing. And around the same time, my cat, which was kind of bought for me when I was born. So it was all within sort of 5 months, you know, and that's a difficult age anyway. You know, I was just turned 14. So anyway, I got sent off to a boarding school, and that was where I discovered my first drug, which was alcohol. And I remember that first drink, and I literally felt like I'd come home. I felt comfortable in my body. I didn't feel any pain. I could talk to people. I didn't feel so disconnected from everyone. And yeah, what I learned is I don't have an off button. You know, anything I like, I just do to excess. And I liked what alcohol did to me. So it was from the moment I woke up, going down the stairs to the school with a can of special or in a straw in my hand, you know. And, you know, I got kicked out of school for drinking. And then I got sent to a school for people to get kicked out of school. And I got kicked out of that for drinking. So basically, it got to the time when I was 16, and I was then legally allowed to live on my own, which was like, great, you know, party's on, do you know what I mean? So it was like, okay, I got into hash as well, and heavily into acid, and anyway, you know, fast forward a few years, you know, I had psychosis from the acid, I had psychosis from the hash, and I was physically addicted to the alcohol, and it got to the point I was having the DTs every day. I needed two or three special brew just to feel normal. But I managed to stop somehow, and this is what I want to share about the difference between willpower and this program. I got to a point with the alcohol where I knew I was basically on my way out, and I had a really bad flu, and I couldn't drink normally, and I really tried, but I just felt so rotten. So I kind of thought to myself, okay, when the worst of this flu goes, then the worst of the sort of physical withdrawal will have gone as well. So I just sort of roughed it out, sweated it out for 5 days, and then I was off the drink. But I've since learned, being in recovery, that I never had a problem with drugs. I never had a problem with alcohol. I had a problem being clean, and you know, that was my problem. And you know, I'd put the alcohol down. A few months later, discovered amphetamines and Valium and Red Bull, which I drank about 3 to 5 litres a day for 15 years. You know what I mean? I didn't have an off button. I've been trying to stop for a long time actually, but like I said, I just had a problem being clean. You know, I couldn't bear being in my own skin. I discovered, you know, in this time I've got married, I've had kids. Well, we might have the kids. I've sort of watched, but you know, and you know, got separated as well. And she went to a couple of Al-Anon meetings, and she found some AA literature there. And you know, she'd never seen me drink. You know, I'd been off the alcohol now 15 and a half years, not a drop of alcohol. But I've been doing other stuff. I was on all sorts of like prescription stuff, and you know. But she brought this AA literature back, and I thought, well, it looks interesting. And to be honest, it was like, well, it's a night I can go out the house away from her, you know. So you know, I went to a meeting, and I remember turning up at the meeting. And at the time, I was 15 and a half years without a drink. And I turned up at the meeting, and there was a bloke doing a chair, and he was 3 months. And he was sitting there, and he was comfortable, and he was laughing, he was relaxed, he was just chilled, you know. And I was sitting there 15 and a half years without a drink. I'm gripping the chair like that in fear, and you know what I mean? It's like, so I knew there's got to be something to this. Through AA, I then found out about NA, and I went to my first NA meeting, and I basically heard people describing me in better words than I could describe myself. You know, it was like, how do they know me? You know what I mean? So I heard this keep coming back, so I kept coming back. I remember I used to get clean, I'd get to 5 days, feel good, use again. You know, and this cycle of, they used to call me 5 Day James, and I got about 40 white key rings at home. Seriously, 40 white key, and every time I meant it, I'd had enough. I fucking had enough. I was in tears. I've had enough. But I hadn't. You know, there was still some concoction, some sort of, well, maybe just take a little bit of that and a bit of that, and then maybe just don't have that till later on. And do you know what I mean? There was still a way I could manipulate and control my using. So I sort of carried on, you know. Until it basically got to a point. And I hadn't planned for this to be my last day. I had 3 Red Bull. I went to meet my kids. I had a panic attack. I had 3 Valium. I came home, and I remember just this internal voice. My head was like, you know, my head was on fire, and it was just this internal voice just saying, that's it, no more bullshit, that's it, I'm done. Do you know what I mean? I'm done. And thank God, I've been coming to meetings for 2.5 years at that point. I had all these phone numbers, I phoned someone. I don't remember a word they said, but the strange thing was that through coming to the meetings, I somehow had memorised all the readings, and I had all the literature. I had a sponsor. I knew how to meditate. And literally, my obsession for drugs turned to an obsession for recovery just overnight like that. And I just did everything suggested from day one. You know, I tried to picture a power greater than myself. And at first, it was kind of, you know, my parents' sort of faces in the edge of the universe somewhere. And I sort of prayed to that. Yeah. And, you know, I did gratitude lists every morning, because I knew, you know, grateful addict doesn't use. So it's like, you know, I can't use anymore. It's like, just can't. And I got to, you know, I did my 90 and 90. But basically, on the third day of doing what was suggested, the obsession to use just left me. And that was proof to me of how great than myself. I did not do that. And for the first time in my life, I felt comfortable in my own skin. You know, and I had a bit of peace. And, you know, there's not a man, woman or beast is going to stop me from hanging on to that, you know. That is so valuable, that gift of, I don't know what it is, just gift. It was a gift. So my logic is, you know, if there's a gift, there's got to be a giver. So, okay, there is something greater than me. For my whole life, I thought I was the centre of it all, you know. So really, I just threw myself into this stuff. I worked the steps to the best of my ability. And every day I would always, for me, meditation was a really big tool. It would stop my head from spinning and just give me perspective and a bit of peace. I just threw myself into this. That's all I can say. It's not really rocket science, to be honest. It was just get to a meeting a day, keep in contact, people on the phone, pray whether you believe it or not, you know. The meditation, the gratitude list, and there's a great, great pamphlet that I did for my first year and a half of recovery, Living the Program. I got into a habit of doing that every night, and that really just put the day in perspective. And no matter what my head had told me about the day, I sort of went through those questions, and it's kind of like, hasn't been such a bad day, you know, it's been all right, actually. In recovery, I've had to deal with a lot of things. My income got, all my benefits got stopped, and I was living on £6 a day for like the first 2.5 years. But the first thing I did when I found that out was the Serenity Prayer. You know, it was literally this stuff just became ingrained in me. I don't know. I still do five. I do 5 meetings a week. I still every morning prayer, meditation, gratitude list. I'm phoning people. It's service. You know, service is really. Really vital. Always make sure I've got at least 2 or 3 weekly commitments. When I started, I didn't think I'd get through step 4. I heard about these so-called scary steps, you know, 4 and 9, and I didn't think I'd get through step 4, and I got through it. And then I didn't think I'd get through step 9. I thought, I can't do this amends. I can't do it. But I did it, and it just released a load of baggage off me. It was like taking off a rucksack full of rocks, and just, oh, you know. And then I, the 10, 11 and 12, which I see as like a daily sort of, if I can do 10, 11 and 12 on a daily basis, you know, I'll be doing all right. I never thought I'd finish the steps, and I did. And I never thought I'd sponsor people, and I did. And I never thought I'd be a secretary at a meeting, and I was. And all of this stuff, you know. And also, I want to share quickly as well, I'd been having a lot of mental health problems for 25 years, you know, and I used, because I had these mental health problems and they were exaggerated by the drugs and everything, I was misdiagnosed my whole life. I was diagnosed with everything from mild schizophrenia to temporal lobe epilepsy. It was only when I got clean and I worked step 4, found out who I was, saw that I needed outside help, went for counselling, and it then became clear that I had PTSD. And I've been doing counselling for that for the last 2.5 years. And, for me, I want to be free of all this stuff, because it's something I used on, you know. And I'm currently just over 3 years clean. And I'm currently going through a court case with my ex. She's not letting me see my kids. She's lied about me in court. There was a period this year I didn't see my kids for 5 months based on her lies. And I tell you, why work the program? Because my fucking life depended on it, you know, just on a daily basis, like just feel that pain, cry, deal with any resentments I need to, just so I can have peace, so I can get my head on the pillow and I'm asleep, you know. And, this program, just basically, there's always one or a combination of steps that will be my solution for any problem I encounter in the day, you know, whether I need to meditate, whether I need to get myself out of myself, just pick up the phone, speak to a newcomer, how are you, and listen, you know, that's it. That stops the self-obsession for me. It's just, how are you, and listen, you know, because I can't be thinking about me if I'm thinking about you, and it works every time. So, I'm very happy. I'm in a difficult place, but I like to say I'm in the process of dealing with, rather than I'm struggling with, just because it, it's just my perception. It needs to be altered. So anyway, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for listening. And